Welcome to the Cricket Podcast. This is your host, Mr. Number 9.
And this is The Film.
Now, the finals are on Sunday. Today is Friday. And we have had two semifinals completed. One absolute second-to-last ball thriller.
Which was awesome. Still now, buzzing.
I think you're kind of underestimating that. But
yeah, yeah. That's my subtle...
Some very clear New Zealand understatements there. And the other one, which, well, let's be honest, Australia played very, very well. Yes. And India were quite disappointing, given they were undefeated until then. Now, looking on to the finals. Now, let me just say, of course, 100%, I would love it if we won, and I truly, desperately want us to win.
I believe we'll win. I have the faith. We've beaten Australia already in this tournament, which for me says enough. We know how to beat them. Mm. And I think we actually made it ourselves more difficult in that run chase. Than they did. I think they had the more fragile batting lineup than we did.
I think so too.
I think part of it was, and I hope that they've learned from us, is that the atmosphere and the situation got to the New Zealanders a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That this was a big, and they knew it was a big game coming in, and it had been hyped up a lot. And I think that just played on them just that little bit, because there were some very rash shots when they got out, and Taylor and Elliot got out in successive deliveries.
And Corey Anderson got out to Glenn Maxwell, which was kind of the turning point of the match. Yeah. That's what led to that second batting collapse, which...
Yeah, I was actually thinking the innings break, which you had Taylor out for before the innings break. They had the innings break, came back, and Elliot got out first ball, and both of them just had a dirty wog of the ball across the line, really. There wasn't anything nice about either of their shots they selected.
It would have been nice if Brendan McCullum had just finished the game before the innings.
Yeah, it would have been.
That would have been the way to do it, BMAC.
But yeah, that innings break and those wickets really dampened New Zealand's momentum. They'd had good momentum up to then.
Well, as I was saying, like, I desperately do want us to win, and I do believe we can win. That all being said, if we did lose, as long as we play as well as I know our team and our players can play, and they don't let the occasion overcome them, I can't be prouder.
Yeah, well, you know? Exactly.
Even if they have a shit game and they play this one bad game, be disappointed for maybe a day or two, but... You know, they've won every game they've played in front of us.
Exactly.
And they've played the way we've all wanted them to play.
Yes.
No fear, like, so much humility and respect for their opponents. They make us proud that they're our team.
Oh, they've played the way that we've always wanted the New Zealand cricket team to play.
Absolutely.
And especially this cricket team, which, bar a few changes, has sort of been the basic players have been there for quite some time now. And we've seen them at the very lowest. Mm. That was only a couple of years ago when they were very, very low.
Yep.
And we all watched them and went, and the cricketing public in New Zealand got really agitated at the New Zealand team. And it was because we could look at them and see that they were all wonderful cricket players, but they were just doing dumb stuff.
Yeah.
And Brendan McCullum was one of the worst of it, of getting out too easily, trying to have a walk at it and trying to get too many runs too quickly and not batting sensibly. And I think
becoming captain has just changed him for the better.
And I think also he's taken on the responsibilities in the test match a lot more, and he's focused a lot on his test batting. And before this, you know, a few years ago, he was one of the most derided players for being a T20 person, too much T20 mentality, and just, you know, having a whack. And that coming into the test playing ability. And some of it really was the fact that the rest of the players had sort of not really... There was a few young players in it that hadn't really got up. Him and Taylor are really the only batsmen of note that were doing anything. And this is, you know, 3-4 years ago. Daniel Vittori wasn't in the team. This is when he was out. And they were having the rift between them about who was captain and who wasn't.
Mm.
You just got the feeling that the two of them were just having too much pressure. They're having to carry their team too much.
Yep.
I felt really with this New Zealand team revival has been with both those players, them getting a bad score isn't the end of the day. Any format of the game for the New Zealand team. And both of them have seemed to have focused more on their test batting as opposed to their short overs, where they know they've got the time and they will try and bat for a day.
Yeah.
And that's something that they do and they have done for days in the case of both of them, really.
Yep, yep.
And that has really
and
helped.
And Kane Williamson.
And Kane Williamson has just come on leaps and bounds in the last sort of 4 years where he's really matured really quickly, and him coming on has really helped the other two, because suddenly there's a third batter who
it helps for Brendan McCullum. Like, they had this change of philosophy and all the players have bought into it.
Yes.
And it really helps that you have such a special player like Kane Williamson coming in to this team. Like, you can tell he is gonna... Like, I don't want to put too much pressure on him, and I'm sure he listens to our podcast religiously, that I don't want to put too much pressure on him, but you feel like he's going to be one of our all-time greats. The thing is, I've had that feeling about Jesse Ryder, about Lou Vincent, about Gautam Gupta, though, he's now justifying, and Brendan McCullum as well, and now he's justifying it. So,
to be fair, both Brendan McCullum and Martin Gupta have justified it before. They just went into a bit of a, both of them individually at different times have gone into a bit of a form slump, and and they're finding their way back. Well, Brendan comes well out, but now Gupta's really coming back out of a bit of a slump there, but they've proven that they are class players.
Yes, absolutely. That being said, if you are Michael Clark, what is your plan? How do you beat the Kiwis? I mean, if you read the press, they just need to show up. Obviously, that's not what he's thinking.
The Australian press, anyway.
Yeah.
I think the game plan was shown at Eden Park. Whilst, yes, as I was saying, I feel that was a bit of atmosphere, and the Kiwis really weren't looking, their backers weren't really looking their best, and they made some really poor choices. They were showing susceptibility to Stark and to Johnson and the rest of the fast bowlers with some good full-length swinging deliveries, you know. That good pace, you know, nice and up there, allowing the ball to swing both ways, and the Kiwis just seem to be having issues. And part of that, I think, and this is actually the decision I would make if I win the toss for either team, part of that is batting first and getting that scoreboard pressure.
I think that's been Australia's plan all tournament. I think New Zealand have preferred to bat second, except very rarely, like in the game against West Indies, they won the toss and decided to bat first. But oftentimes they like to bowl first. They back their batting to get any score, and they back their bowling to keep it to a score that they can chase easily.
Yeah.
The way they look at it, if their bowling concedes 350 runs, then their batting can get it, because they feel like they've got one of the best bowling lineups in the world, and they don't fear any other bowling lineups.
No. So I think Australia, though, is the bat first, and maybe not, and one or two options. And this may just come down to how they're feeling, and really I think it's the, might only be one or two options, it might just be do the New Zealand approach, which is have an opener or two that is going to take it to the bowlers, and take it to Trent Bolt and to Southee, and try and knock them off their line. So be...
That would be David Warner, you'd want to pick him to do that, and let Aaron Finch play the long, sensible knock, like he's done all tournament.
Like he's done all tournament. And so, and it will require Warner to step up and actually do it. And he's had a bit of a...
He's been crap all tournament. Let's not
ordinary,
be...
Yeah, he's had a very, very ordinary tournament. But if he can step up and do that role, and I think it's really give him free license to do it. Maybe he needs to think about it and go, right, not quite the B-Max style, which is from the first ball, but actually play myself in and then take to the bowlers. And have, after that, Steve Smith and such like coming in to steady it back up again. Like that sort of attack to it. And really get through Southee and Bolt and get into the second line bowlers, and then really start to try and launch from there.
To an extent, I see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I'm going to suggest something for both teams, which I would never suggest any team do, which is change your lineups in the final. Ooh. I would, in fact, drop David Warner. He's shown no form against the swinging ball. He got out early to England. He got out early to New Zealand. And any game where the bowling has actually pressured them, he's just not come on form. I'm saying Steve Smith's pretty much played his opener all tournament. Open with him. Let him play with Aaron Finch. That's a partnership that works. I would take in George Bailey back into the team, because he's actually done nothing wrong and played pretty good in that one game he played against England and then got dropped. Pretty much for no reason. That is what I would do. I don't think in Australia are going to do that, but I think that's the sort of ballsy decision you need to make. In a final, there's no room for any passengers. For New Zealand, I think the only real weakness we have is we lack that fifth bowler. And that is where, if we don't get the teams out for a very low, get a lot of wickets early, the teams can later on come to punish us.
Yeah.
And that has happened against teams which we haven't gotten early wickets against, or haven't got a lot of early wickets against.
Yeah, what was happening?
South Africa.
South Africa, I mean, they scored a lot of runs in the short overs they had.
West Indies, if they had preserved some wickets, would have definitely threatened us.
The only reason that...
And Bangladesh got a good score against us because they managed to keep their early wickets and
that's what I'm talking about with the Australian's game plan, is to, you know, if you're going to have someone go hard at the early bowlers to try to get them off the line, to try to get them out, get Bolt and Southee out of the attack early. One of them's doing it, and then Smith and St. Finch are playing the anchor roles and seeing out the fast bowlers until Brendan's forced to make a change because nothing's happening.
I think our batting is strong enough.
Yeah.
I would, this is very controversial, drop Ross Taylor from our team and prick in Nathan McCullum. You're not losing much in the batting, and you get some more lower order hitting that way if need be. So if we are batting first, I can see Nathan McCullum batting a good 30, 40 runs off 15, 20 deliveries.
Yeah.
Well within his capabilities, maybe even 25 deliveries. And that bowling at the depth, which we need, and the middle overs to get those run takes down, Corey Anderson is fantastic for getting those quick wickets. I would bowl him on one end with Vettori, or if Vettori is bowling early, save Enmak for this and use Enmak at the death. He is well capable, and I think in a big ground like Melbourne, the spinners are going to have their final chance to show what they're made of.
I think that's not a bad plan. If you're doing that, I would actually bowl Enmak first and save Vettori for the death.
Either way.
Just because Vittori's been bowling through the tournament and has had that bit of
absolutely experience.
And you don't want to throw too much pressure on someone. Just you're in for the final and you're bowling the death against a really good attack. You know?
Absolutely.
I actually disagree with dropping Taylor. I see what your plan is, and I don't know who I would take out to accommodate Enmak in there. But Taylor, I feel, it's almost...
It's like he's due for a big score.
And the thing is, he's been building towards it. And he is really starting... Yes, he had a bit of... the semi-final wasn't too bad. The quarter-final was a bit scratchy.
He got a soft dismissal at a key moment.
That was the...
Corey Anderson had to hit. And so we don't begrudge the way he got up.
And so I was...
And Martin Guptill had a ridiculous run out that shouldn't have happened, but mistakes happen. But when you're set like that in a pressure situation, getting out softly is a cardinal sin.
And he got
softly out against Bangladesh too.
Yeah. So Bangladesh, he was scratchy, but got some runs. Then against West Indies, he was still a bit scratchy, but he got the runs better. Mm. And wasn't quite as horrible looking about it.
Mm.
You know, semi-final, yes, got out softly, but I felt that during the rest of it, he was actually batting not too badly.
Mm.
He wasn't quite getting the acceleration he needed, but to be fair, also at the time, he was sort of batting the way they sort of needed to bat.
To a degree.
It wasn't quite as well. Like, yes, he should have been getting a few more singles. He blocked a few too many. He was being a bit too defensive on it. And the problem there is that they got exasperated by him getting out so softly.
Mm.
Like, he got out really... I mean, he got out to the bowler that... He got out to Dooney, where... A.B. de Villiers was trying his best to find ways of not bowling Dooney, with Dooney being the fifth bowler, and him not really having many others.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's really poor. But I was sort of watching just those last three innings. Taylor seems to be in there, and it seems like it's starting to actually... Because we all know Taylor's a wonderful batsman.
Yes.
We were talking about the best batsman we've got. I mean, top three, BMAC, Williamson and Taylor. And even though Taylor's having a bit of a form slump, it will come back. And it will all click for him at some point, and he'll be back on top. And it's just looking, and yes, he's currently the weak link out of the team, but it's just looking like it's starting to get there.
The thing is, do we need runs from Ross Taylor when everybody else is in good form? Or do we need a good 10 overs from a specialist bowler who will also be able to contribute with runs?
Yes, I see your point for it, and I just feel like...
And there's nobody else in the batting lineup who is a weak link. Trent Bolt is capable. Matt Henry is well capable. Yes. Tim Southee is well capable and very mature these days.
Yeah.
And Daniel Vettori is Daniel Vettori. Yeah. We don't even need to go there. And Nathan McCullum, if he were to come in, is a very solid performer with the bat.
Yes.
And a very solid performer on the field. Let's face it.
I do feel that the problem there is that is really aiming for best case scenario, which is that the top batsman... And yes, that's your ideal situation. Your top batsman are getting your runs, and you're only looking at the lower middle order to finish off the last little bit.
With
Taylor in, let's say he's sort of due that big knock, and if things do go badly and Australians get a couple of quick wickets, despite the fact that Taylor didn't show his head to the game against Australia, I feel he's got it in him to be able to go, right...
I just feel like even if you were to swap in Ross Taylor for Nathan McCullum, if New Zealand were to have a worse in a situation where there's say 80 for 4 in the 20th over, there is still enough lower order hitting and there's still enough maturity, depending on who is at the wicket, for them to still make a 300 score at the MCG.
I would be less confident of that at that sort of stage. I mean, maybe getting sort of 150 in 25, 30 overs and being 4 or 5 down there, maybe that's the more distant. That's where I'm looking at Taylor, that if it's gone badly, where we are 4 down and it's coming up to the 20th over.
We have to trust in Elliot.
Yeah, maybe it's just, maybe you're right. Maybe it's in and out of trust. I just feel that
Luke Ronke has not had many runs, but I don't think BMAC is going to take the gloves in the final, because that would be the obvious replacement if we were to keep Taylor. And that actually keeps us having a very strong batting lineup.
Yeah.
But I feel like Ronki hasn't really... he dropped one catch, but he hasn't done anything wrong wicket-keeping-wise.
He hasn't been outstanding, but you're right. He hasn't done anything horribly wrong. He hasn't had a horrible game. He hasn't had a blinder.
He was unlucky the way he got out against Australia with the bouncer, which he ducked and caught his bat behind him. Yeah. Bad technique, but still kind of unlucky.
Yeah.
He did reasonably well against the West Indies. He did pretty good against Sri Lanka. But all the other games, he's been pretty much innocuous with the bat.
Yeah. I feel with Ronki, it's a bit of the...
Unless you want to bring in Tom Latham to a wicket keep.
Yeah, but then if you're swapping Ronki out because you want to bring Nathan McCullum in, that's not really helping. No. You still have to take someone else out.
Yeah. Well, if you were to take in Tom Latham for Ronki and take in Ross Taylor for Nathan McCullum, that's a double change in a final.
Which is a big call. Yes, maybe that, but then the problem there is...
Tom Latham can't play anywhere other than opener.
No, he can in the one day as he is five. So you put him at five and Alec moves up to four. And that's a fine replacement. It does what we need in that. And you've got that player. He's not quite the finishing change-up batsman that Elliot is, where he can move from accumulation to finishing quite as easily.
Mm-hmm. And like,
but my more thought is that that's a really... Nathan McCullum's been around a bit. Tom Latham hasn't. And that's a really... Like, if you're going to throw the new kid in the fire, that's not really the time to do it. It's a pretty harsh call.
But would you like the idea of bringing in Nathan McCullum?
I'm not against it. I feel like Taylor, in this game, Taylor's going to offer more. He's building towards this, and it's really going to be... So he is going to show something at this one that's going to be there.
Well, I hope you're right, because let's be honest, Brendan McCullum's not dropping Ross Taylor. And he said many times that he would have no one else at 3 and 4 than Williamson and Taylor.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, I'm picking hairs here.